Hello and welcome to the Investors Chronicles Personal Finance Podcast. I'm Moira O'Neill and joining me in the studio today are my colleagues Leonora Walters and Kate Bealey. We're also delighted to have a special guest on the show. Lee Robertson is Chief Executive Officer at Investment Quorum, a wealth management firm. Now, in today's show, we're going to look at some smart and sassy exchange-traded funds that have launched this year and maybe can give your portfolio a low-cost boost. We'll also look at structured products and how they could make you an attractive return maybe in stormy markets. We'll also have an update on Alliance Trust. And now that has made some big changes following pressure from an activist investor. But first, to this week's Portfolio Clinic, which features Robert, who is a 56-year-old GP. And Robert expects to retire next year on an NHS pension of £60,000 a year. But he's also going to receive a pension lump sum of £300,000 and he aims to invest this. He's actually been running a practice portfolio on the Hargreaves Lansdown platform as preparation, but he really wants some advice from our experts as to how he should construct the portfolio. Now, Lee Robertson was one of the experts on this portfolio, and so we're very happy to have him here. And Lee, you put together a suggested growth and income portfolio for our Dr. Robert. Could you just talk me through a bit of it and how it works?
Yes, of course. I'd start by saying this is a very interesting portfolio, a very interesting case. Robert's doing all the right things. He's doing his practice portfolio. He's investigating what he can do. He's putting a lot of thought into this. So what we did is we took the portfolio. I mean, it's always slightly difficult because we're not entirely sure of his personal situation. But what we've done is we've gone for a portfolio which comprises, in the main, active funds, because that seems to be the way that Robert leans. And what we've done is we've broadly diversified. We thought that the existing portfolio he was looking at was underweight of the US, and the US actually is, although it's stuttering, it is probably pulling its way forwards now. We also thought it was slightly underweight Japan, and with all the work that's going on in Japan, what's being called Abenomics, which is the three arrows of growth, etc., we thought we needed a bit more there too. So what we did was we built a portfolio that's designed to be well diversified geographically, to have a bit more in the US, a bit more in Japan, and we built income in. And although Robert says he doesn't really want income, I mean, he's in a very fortunate position, £60,000 a year pension, index linked going forward. Inflation does impact on portfolios. And if Robert's retiring now around about 55, he might be looking at a 30-odd year retirement. And whilst inflation is low currently, we think it will come back again. So what we did is we built a portfolio which is looking at a real return basis. So not just growth stocks, which some people may find interesting because he's not really looking for income. But of course, income reinvested over the long term will work very well against the effects of inflation.
I mean, he does talk about being able to be comfortable with high risk because he's got this very secure, guaranteed income. And, you know, he's dabbled in the past with investments and been burnt. And I think he mentioned something about another mistake with India where he timed it completely wrong. But I mean, obviously he wants to have a bit of fun with the portfolio too. And I think maybe the strategy that you're presenting is a nice way of looking at things, and he can still have that active management, but it's a portfolio that he can draw on if at some point, you know, his plans go wrong and he does need a bit of extra income. It's going to be there for him, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, 30 years, give or take, is a long time. Situation can change, you know, health can change. All that kind of stuff can impact on what you need to do with your portfolio.
He's retiring relatively young as well, because he's 56, so he's got a huge, you know, potentially 40 years ahead of him. You just don't know.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, looking at this, he may be retired as long as he was working. And this is the thing now with increasing longevity. And we have quite a few doctors as clients, actually. They seem to live a long time. They tend to have fairly healthy lifestyles. They keep their weight down and they seem to move forward. So he could be retired as long as he was working, conceivably. So situations may change over the years, which is why we like this real return basis. Some of the funds for growth, some for income, but reinvested for the time being. But it gives him the opportunity later on.
Could we have a look at a couple of the holdings? I mean, you've got a couple in there that we really like. That's the, you know, Fundsmith Equity. That's always an interesting one. That's Terry Smith's vehicle, and it's got some, it's quite concentrated portfolio, isn't it?
It is. It's a concentrated portfolio, but it's done incredibly well. I mean, in my firm, we're big fans of Terry Smith. I mean, he does exactly what he says on the tin in the main, and I think as an investor, that's exactly what you're looking for. There tends not to be these massive, despite it being a concentrated portfolio, there's not massive upswings and downswings with him. So I think one can never predict the future, but to date, it's been a fairly safe bet for investors.
And you've got the classic there, which everyone's been buying into, which is the CF Woodford Equity Income Fund. Is that a Me Too fund, or is that something that everybody should be taking very seriously?
Funnily enough, we didn't go in right at outset. Mm-hmm. We wanted, lots of people did, because Neil Woodford's such a great reputation, but he does fade in and out of favour. And when he was Invesco Perpetual, there were whole periods when his fund was completely out of favour. But he's a conviction investor, and because we believe in medium to long-term investment, we're not traders, we think he will see you through, and his track record shows that. And actually, since launch, I mean, it's pretty hard to argue with the performance.
Great. I mean, there's also, you've got your Japanese exposure there via Linzel Train. And people might know them via Nick Train, who runs the Finsbury Growth and Income Fund, which is UK focused, but they also have their Japanese investment side as well. Why do you like that one in particular?
Yet again, another conviction investment house. You know, they tend to go for fairly concentrated buy lists. They work really hard at knowing the companies they invest in. So we like their process, and the process has delivered good returns. Of course, Nick Train is very well known, we know, because of Finsbury and Linzel Train UK Equity. But they actually are a very good Japan investor as well as a UK investor.
Okay, that's one to look at. Well, moving from active funds onto passives. This week, we've been looking at the exchange traded fund market, which has actually seen lots of innovations over the last few years. And 2015 so far has been no different. We've had a slew of low cost new product launches. And in this week's magazine, Kate Bealey has been profiling some of the year's most exciting launches and details how they could be used to improve your portfolio. Kate, could you tell us a bit about some of these, what we've called smart and sassy ETFs?
Yeah, sure. So I guess the smart bit is it relates to smart beta. And there are so many new ETFs coming out all the time, it feels like, and tons in the kind of world of smart beta, which is anything where the index is weighted by something other than market cap. So I tried to look at some which were actually of kind of real use in a portfolio and weren't just kind of gimmicky, which some of them arguably are.
Because, of course, ETFs are used by big institutions to do all sorts of different trading strategies, and not all of them are going to be really relevant for a private DIY investor portfolio. So you've tried to pick out some of the ones that are.
Yeah, and so one of the interesting ones I thought is actually interesting because it is arguably smart beta, but also quite straightforward, and that's the DBX Tracker's FTSE 100 Equal Weight. And so that weights the FTSE 100 it gives every stock in the FTSE 100 an equal weighting in the index. So instead of, you know, having the largest ones taking up a really big chunk of the index, you've got everything on equal par. So it means that you get more access to the smaller stocks in the FTSE. You're not going to be kind of exposed to stocks with an inflated share price. And it's just quite a nice way of getting a bit of diversification around an index that loads of people will be tracking. And so DBX Trackers is the first to come in with this index, and it's a new one for them. So I thought that was quite an innovative.
Lee, do you think that sounds like an interesting way of tackling the FTSE 100 index? Because that index has come under a lot of criticism for being very, very heavily weighted to just a handful of companies and a handful of sectors.
I think it is a good way. I mean, I think you're absolutely right in what you've just said. If you're tracking just the pure index in the way it's composed, You know, miners make up a big part of it, for instance, and when they are hit, you're really hit in just the plain standard ETF. So I think this is a very interesting way, as Kate says, of pulling down to some of the smaller stocks and getting an equal weighting. So I like it, actually.
Great. Okay, what else is in your bag of really, really interesting ETFs?
So other kind of ways or other, I guess, categories of looking at new ETFs are things like themes or ideas in the market. And one of those is buybacks or share buybacks in the US. And that's been quite an ongoing theme for a while. So this is the idea of companies using cheap share prices to buy back their own shares, which pushes up the value of the remaining shareholders' investment in companies. And so that's been something that's been ongoing in the US for a little while. And so we've just had a few ETFs come out and start tracking that. So Amundi has just bought one out tracking S&P 500 buyback index. And the idea is that these companies which announce share buybacks, often they have kind of increased share prices or a little share price rally for a few years afterwards. There's data to show that's the case. So the idea behind this index is you've got some really good US companies which have announced buybacks, and they might be going on, or their share prices might be heading up for a few years. So this is one way you could get in and track some quite interesting companies. It's quite a kind of, I like it because it's quite a straightforward, or it's quite a compelling argument and quite a strong narrative. And that is a theme that has been proven over the past kind of couple of years. And there are some coming out tracking European buyback indices, but I think there's slightly less weight behind that argument. I think it seems like Europe is more about dividend payments than it is buybacks. So this is quite an interesting ETF, I think.
I mean, it sounds like one that our Dr. Robert might be interested in for his US exposure that he was that he was quite low on in his portfolio. But Lee, would you get that a US exposure via a passive? I mean, what's your view there?
Yeah, I think the US market is actually pretty efficient, so ETFs are a nice way to get into the US market. I agree that this might work for Dr. Robert, but of course something like this, you've just got to keep a real close eye on it, because as the companies stop doing the share buybacks and the share prices begin to settle, you've got to be on top of that. And it's very easy to sort of not forget your portfolio, but forget to monitor it. And if you've gone into this particular type of strategy, you've got to make sure that you're watching for when it's no longer suitable.
Yeah, it definitely is a trend, not a kind of buy and hold it. And
I mean, with these innovative new products as well, I suppose you've also got to watch that they're actually doing what they've said they're going to set out and do, because that with no real track record there, you've got to keep a closer eye on them.
We've talked about this in previous podcasts, haven't we, that smart beta, lots of the smart beta is still unproven. Some of it's beginning to come through. So yeah, you're absolutely right. I think with ETFs, it's very easy to become a bit more of a trader. So you've got to really keep an eye on what's going on and are they actually delivering what you hope, and not get too emotionally attached to anything in a portfolio. If it's not working, you've got to get rid of it.
So from active funds to ETFs, and now we're going to look at structured products, which are another type of fund. We found that they, for some people are saying, they could be a really useful addition to your portfolio with rate rises on the horizon and market uncertainty, because they aim to protect against market downside and they are aiming to achieve a defined outcome. And Leonora Walters has been looking at how these kinds of products work, as well as some key risks that you should be aware of before you invest. So, Leonora, can you tell us why some experts are saying investors should consider a structured product?
Yes, I mean, structured products can offer the chance for better returns than investing directly in the market. These are investments backed by a counterparty where the returns defined, let's say, by reference to an underlying measurement, such as the FTSE 100, with returns delivered at a defined date. I think the easiest way to explain what to do is to give an example. An example of a structured product might be where you invest some money and the product will give you 65% on the investment if the FTSE 100 is at the same level or higher on the day the product matures in 5 years' time. So all going well, it could be very attractive. Now, as of all investments, there's always a downside. If the FTSE 100 in this hypothetical example, let's say, is below that level, It'll return your investment capital, but nothing else. So I suppose you might as well have been in cash. And then if some products, say the FTSE 100 fell 50%, then you might have your capital reduced by the equivalent fall in the FTSE 100. So I think what these products are doing, they're almost like a bet on the market doing certain things. So they can beat the general direction. It's slightly binary. One FTSE 100, say, 1 point below, and you could find yourself making losses that perhaps you wouldn't otherwise. With the current market volatility, I suppose theoretically it is more risk of products falling below the level required for the product not to give you a return or reduce your capital. That said, recent research by comparestructuredproducts.com shows that few structured products have fallen below the level necessary to lose capital. And I believe in the recent correction, nothing's sort of like hit those levels yet. So, nothing unpleasant yet. I think another advisor also points out that typically a lot of these products need to fall 40% or 50% for you to lose capital. And it's quite unusual, let's say, maybe for the FTSE 100 to, lose that amount over, let's say, a 5 or 6 year period, which is typically, what these products are structured over. Now, what advisors do point out is that some of these products are taking a bet, let's say, on whether FTSE 100 or another index is. But there are some providers who will put together, say, a basket of four stocks. And if any one of those stocks, for example, was 50% below its starting level, then you might lose capital. Now, that's a real risk because individual shares can go down. We've seen, for example, commodities having a bad time. Another one that advisors actually specifically pointed out was Tesco, because that is held in some of these products. And as we all know, Tesco is having a really bad time. So I think their general advice is, if you are going to do these things, don't get one linked to a basket of four stocks. Get one linked to, a large, broad index like the FTSE 100.
I think you have to be very clear about these, about what the actual risks are in the products. I mean, some investors find them really, really useful. Mm. We've filled a lot of negative stuff just there, but yeah. A lot of people do find them useful for sort of balancing the overall risk in their portfolio. Mm. Lee, do you use them at all in your clients' portfolios?
Not often, if I'm completely honest. I mean, I get everything that they're meant to do. The worries I have, and I think Leonora is absolutely right, if you're going into one with just a few stocks, you're really in trouble. I mean, just look, as Leonora says, Tesco's, VW at the moment, all this kind of stuff. It's very easy to come a cropper. So go for a much broader index or measurement. We don't use them particularly. We find that in the aggregate, they tend not to deliver that much more than cash. For every winner, there's a loser. And my big worry at the moment is, whilst it might not feel like it, the FTSE is actually at a fairly high-ish level. And if you're going in right now, if we get a big pullback, we may see some real trouble down the line. In 5 years, which most of them tend to be, is a long time in investment terms. So we tend to go more the active and passive route than the structured route, if I'm honest.
And if you want to lower the risk in a portfolio, would you introduce cash or fixed income instead rather than using a structured product?
We would, yeah. Although fixed income itself, fixed interest is a real problem at the moment because it's with this strange period with bonds and bond yields and stuff. But typically in a normal period, that's what we would do, property, bonds, etc.
So at the moment, are you just really using cash as the risk diversifier?
We tend to be cash and a bit of property, although property in itself is becoming a crowded trade. It's quite a difficult time for investors at the moment.
Leonora, were there any positives you can bring out of the structured products? I mean, you have identified a few products that people might find interesting.
Yes, in the article. I think in terms of positives, there's really the statistics on, products that have fallen below their barrier, and there aren't that many that have done that. So
they have been doing their job, really.
They have been. Well, not necessarily doing their job, but let's say, even if they're not necessarily hitting the level at which you have to hit to get, 8 times your investment or whatever, I don't think that many of them have fallen below the level at which you start to lose your capital. There have been some, but not that many.
I think also they've got much better over the years. I mean, if we think back a decade, every bank window had structured product posters in them, and they were linked to very strange indices and things. So I think they have got much better. They're much better governed. Professional indemnity insurers insist on that. So I think investors are in a better space than they probably were a decade
ago.
And
the counterparty risks are highlighted a lot more these days since we've had Lehman and all sorts of disasters, you know, the credit crisis. I mean, a lot of these products, they're backed by a bank usually, and you've got to look at who that counterparty backer is and whether you think that they're a strong enough institution, don't you?
I mean, that's the most difficult part, because who would have thought Lehman's, one of the biggest banks in the world, one of the biggest counterparties in the world, then it fell over. So lots of people were wrong-footed. And I don't think any amount of due diligence would have foreseen that, because governments missed it and regulators missed it, never mind individual investors.
I'd say that was, in some ways, it was a kind of like quite a bad one-off event, though, because I asked the providers again, I said, has any other counterparty on, you know, kind of UK structured products defaulted since Lehman, and said no, they haven't. So you could say, in a way, that was kind of sort of the proverbial black swan, it's certainly not, you know, it's not usual. And you can also get an idea of how strong a company is by looking at its credit rating. I mean, again, I think, like Lee said, it, you know, it's not going to predict a black swan event, but you can choose products with financial institutions considered to be stronger. You know, if you don't want that risk, ones of slightly lower ratings typically will pay you more. So I suppose, in a way, you get compensation for perhaps a slightly riskier one by getting a bigger return.
Well, that sounds like a sensible advice, Eleonora, for anyone who's interested in a structured product. So now moving on to another type of investment. This is investment trusts. We're going to look at goings on at Alliance Trust, which is actually one of the UK's largest investment trusts. And it's had to introduce some drastic changes following pressure from an activist shareholder called Elliott Associates. Leonora, you've been following this story. What has happened? What's the latest development?
Yeah, it's a really long-going saga. I mean, Alliance Trust has had problems with activist investors for years and years and years, which in some ways is quite fair, because the fund's performed badly and it's traded at a wide discount to net asset value. Earlier this year, it came to an agreement with a shareholder called Elliott. Elliott agreed it wouldn't publicly put pressure on Alliance Trust, and it wouldn't agitate at a public meeting until the AGM in 2016. I think that's spring 2016. And Alliance Trust, in return, said it would appoint two directors to its board that Elliott suggested, and that it would conduct a review on ways it could improve itself. Now, it's done this review, and the results of the review have suggested a few things. First of all, its board is becoming fully independent, which means Chief Executive Officer Catherine Garrett-Cox will leave the board. That's quite a high-profile departure, but she is continuing on. She's going to be Chief Executive Officer and a director of the investment subsidiary Alliance Trust Investments. I think other major savings are cost-cutting. It's got Alliance Trust's two subsidiaries, and it's going to put some cost cutting in place at Alliance Trust Investments, and it's looking to save around $6 million a year, and it's hoping that Alliance Trust Investments will become a profitable business, a monthly profitability by the end of 2016. I mean, that has been a gripe of people, that these subsidiaries are taking a long time to become profitable and a drag on it. I think, in terms of accountability, Alliance Trust is actually it's going to try and be a bit more transparent and introduce a benchmark, because it wasn't doing this. So now it's going to measure itself against MSCI All Country World Index. And if it doesn't beat it by at least 1% a year net of fees, a full review will be undertaken, and there'll be consideration given to outsourcing the management to external managers, which is, again, a suggestion of Elliott. Alliance Trust has struggled, I think, as I said, performance-wise. It's actually done a bit better over the past year, but it does typically trade in a discount to NAV between 10 and 15%, which is fairly wide. But now they're like really focusing on trying to bring that into single-digit discount to NAV, which is probably a more usual level for an investment trust. And the other thing they're doing is cutting costs, and they're going to try and bring down the ongoing charge to about 0.45%, which will make it one of the cheapest investment trusts. So at the moment it charges 0.69%, which is not bad. I mean, it's not bad for an active fund, but considering the underperformance in the past, then maybe it's a bit much to ask that.
So should we all be rushing out to buy a Lions Trust now it's making all these changes? I mean, how are analysts receiving these changes?
Well, they're not saying rush out and buy it. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think there was one comment saying that the discount level and the, you know, the future promise was attractive, but most analysts are like, proof of the pudding will be in the eating. We'll see what happens. It's been performing better for a year. It's only a year. Some of analysts are saying, well, you know, they're not really changing the equities portfolio, you know, so they are going to like get rid of some, let's say what they call non-core investments, but apparently they only account for around 6% of assets. So one analyst says, you know, how are they going to start beating, you know, this benchmark regularly if the equity portfolio's not really changed? And then there's other analysts saying, well, yeah, you know, it could be interesting, but it's early days and there's lots of other global growth investment trusts, and they name ones like Witten Bankers and Foreign and Colonial Investment Trust. I think their line is, well, you know, why take a gamble on that when you can get, you know, probably a more reliable performance off one of many other global growth investment trusts.
Well, Lee, I can see you nodding your head in agreement there. What's your verdict on a Lions Trust and what investors should be doing?
Well, we keep talking about it, don't we? I'm with Leonora and the analysts that she mentions. I think there are other ways to do this. F&C would be the way we would do it. I think they're not really changing the equity portfolio. I think how much time and distraction is all this activism taking? Much as I like Catherine and what she's tried to do, I think it's just too messy for me to have confidence to put my clients in when I know there's other stuff out there that will do better, has a better track record. Whilst the discount might look appealing, it's just a bit of a leap in the dark for me. And part of what we do for clients is we're always about capital preservation as well as growth. So I'm just not sure I could risk their capital with it.
So that sounds like it's a no from you.
It's a no from me.
Okay. Well, I mean, staying on the subject of investment trusts just for a minute, I'm delighted to tell you that Leonora has recently won two prizes at the Association of Investment Companies Press Awards. She's picked up Best Consumer Financial Journalist and Best Use of Social Media. So then those awards were voted for by investment companies, their managers, brokers and analysts. And Leonora, it's a fantastic achievement and we're all really proud of you. So well done.
Congratulations.
Now, I'm afraid that's all we have time for today. So thank you to Leonora and Kate of the Investors Chronicle. And thanks also to my special guest, Lee Robertson of Investment Quorum. You can read more about investing in NHS pension lump sum. You can read about structured products, exchange traded funds and Alliance Trust in this week's issue of Investors Chronicle. Thank you for listening.